Talkback with Gary Null, Sundays at 8 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Love, you got the power, but you just don't understand. Girl, you've been charging by the hour for your
I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Null. On this program, I don't have guests. You become the guest. Your issues are important. So throughout this hour, you'll have a chance to call in and share your points of view, your insights, your questions, comments. Our number is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And I'm going to start with a couple of commentaries that I think are very germane. Especially, this is from Norman Solomon from CommonDreams.org. He has a program here on the weekend on Progressive Radio Network. And it's all about the greening of America and something that he believes that higher consciousness is what will save the day. And I'm suggesting that by the time we have enough people with enough higher consciousness, there won't be any day to save. It was autumn just a week ago, 2010, it's a time for a lot of people to look, and what do we see? Disillusionment. Because many who deplore the U.S.'s current political trajectory, I'm one of them, both Democrat and Republicans I'm opposed to, because I just see the same party lines. I see those who are fervently pro-union, those who are fervently anti-union as both being wrong. I'm saying let's cut taxes for the rich and the middle class, and let's stimulate more spending through major government programs, being wrong. In fact, just everywhere I look, I just see partial elements. But nothing is going to make a difference. Now, many of us are progressives, which means that we're independent. At one time, we probably aligned ourselves with either conservative Republican or Democrat liberal perspective. Then we saw the limitations and weaknesses, so we moved to a more independent state of mind so we could see things and look for the truth. Then we look for ways we can change the system to benefit everyone. And that's what a progressive does. And now we're gravitating towards hope that individual actions, in tandem with higher consciousness, more down-to-earth lifestyles, and healthy cultural alternatives can succeed where social activism has failed. It's an old story. It's also nothing new. From economic inequalities to global warming to war, the nation's power centers, both left and right, have repulsed those who recognize the urgency of confronting such crisis head-on. High unemployment has become the norm. Top officials in Washington have taken a dive, which they need to have in their popularity. They also have decided to do nothing about climate change. Nothing. And the permanent warfare state, they're booming. They're doing great. When social movements seem to be no match for a destructive status quo, people are apt to look around for alternative strategies. And one of the big ones involves pursuing individual transformation as keys to social change. 40 years ago, such an approach became all the rage. It was boosted by a long essay that made a huge splash in the New Yorker magazine just before a longer version became a small bestseller. The book was called The Greening of America by a Yale University Law School teacher named Charles Reich, who I've interviewed on this program. In the early fall of 1970, it created a sensation. Today, let's consider it as a distant mirror that reflects some similar present-day illusions. On the front cover of The Greening of America, big type proclaimed, "There's a revolution coming. It will not be like revolutions of the past. It will originate with the individual and with culture. And it will change the political structure only at its final act." That autumn, many people were very upbeat about Reich's book, including its great enthusiasm for the revolution of the new generation. That's how it was built. The book condemned war, good. Denounced the overcapitalized corporate state, excellent. Panned the rigidity of schools, should have been. And lauded the sensuality that marijuana was aiding. I oppose that. And dismiss as pathetically venal the liberalism that had driven the country to war in Vietnam. I agree with that. At the time, I scarcely picked up on the fact that the greening of America was purposely non-political. Its crux was personal and cultural liberation. In a word, consciousness, which plays the key role in the shaping of society. And so the revolution must be cultural, for cultural controls the economic and political machine, not vice versa. In effect, the author maintained culture would be a silver bullet, able to bring down the otherwise intractable death machine. Now let's just, at least for this audience, because I know many of you are very deep thinkers, let's freeze frame those two dreamy claims and just think of them for a moment. Consciousness plays the key role in the shaping of society, he said, and culture controls the economic and political machine, not vice versa. Right? Combine those outsized tributes to consciousness, culture with disdain for some plotting struggles. He said, quote, the political activists have had their day and have been given their chance. They ask for still more activism, still more dedication, still more self-sacrifice, believing more the same bad medicine is needed, saying their cure has not yet been tested. It is time to realize that this form of activism merely affirms the state. Must we wait for fascism before we realize that political activism has failed? In his 1970 book, Reich laid it on the line, quote, the great error of our times has been the belief in structural or institutional solutions. The enemy is within each of us. So long as that is true, one structure is as bad as another. And he added a fanciful theory of liberation that would leave behind the corporate liberal constraints of the era. Liberation, he wrote, quote, comes into being the moment the individual frees himself from automatic acceptance of the imperatives of society and the false consciousness which society imposes. Now, his optimism sprang from the belief that the whole corporate state rests upon nothing but consciousness. When consciousness changes, its soldiers will refuse to fight, its police will rebel, its bureaucrats will stop their work, its jailers will open the bars. Nothing can stop the power of consciousness. Unquote. Now, let's just, at least for those of us who appreciate history, and use it as a measurement of whether we're progressing or not. The younger generation are clueless about everything, and I mean everything. Try having a conversation with anyone, when you take any concept of narcissism out of the conversation, you have nothing. Silence. So don't ask someone in their 20s or 30s about what lessons could be learned from this, because they will not have studied and memorized and put to the test history as a lesson. In 1995, the same gentleman, Professor Charles Wright, was out with another book. It was called Opposing the System, his first in 20 years. Gone were the claims that meaningful structural change could come only as a final step after people got their heads and culture together. Instead, the book focused on the melded power of huge corporations and the U.S. government. His new book was as ignored as the greening of America had been ballyhooed. No high-profile excerpt in The New Yorker or any other magazine, scant publicity, and not even faint controversy. Few media outlets bothered to review Opposing the System. The only exception was the New York Times, and it trashed the book. In his 1995 book, he challenged what he called the system, a merger of government, corporate, and media power into a managerial entity more powerful by reason of technology, organization, and control of livelihood than any previously known form of rule. He was right on. I mean, He nailed it. He also astutely noted that we deny and repress the fact that corporate government power, there will be no relief from their economic insecurity or human breakdown until we recognize that uncontrolled economic forces create conflict, not well-being. Again, look at Wall Street. Look at corporate America. Look at privatization. Look at globalization. Look at the first green revolution. Look at the article that Richard Gale and I just wrote out there talking about how Bill Gates' foundation and the Rockefeller Foundation, the World Health Organization, are now developing vaccines that will sterilize hundreds of millions of people. They're playing God. But they're doing it combining government, private corporations, media superstars, and the media. No one's challenging them. We were the first. Now, in sharp contrast to his flat assertion a quarter century earlier that the whole corporate state rests upon nothing but consciousness, which I disagree with, I've had friends, one who was vice president of Goldman Sachs, came to several retreats. He and his wife, living up in Connecticut, are into yoga, meditation, and yet he was the one who was causing an awful lot of risky investments. I remember a couple years ago I was invited to be a keynote speaker at on a Fiji island for Tony Robbins. And it was a big amount of money, and it was one day and two first-class airfare tickets out there. And I said no. And the reason I said no was because that's not how I work. And if someone had done a little homework, they would have seen that my entire career, I've never charged for personal counseling. 95% of all my lectures have been free, and as well as all my work for 33 years on public radio, free, and on PBS stations, 25 specials, free to the station. So why would I suddenly want to go to a place where the only people there were 75 couples who each laid out, I believe it was $75,000, to be there? What are they going to do? I've met so many of these people. They come from very affluent backgrounds but consider themselves liberated, very, very progressive. They're into every new health fad. And yet, at the core of their being, they go to work each day making it a better world? No. Making it a worse world based upon greed and insecurity? Yes. But because they will go to see a movie like Inconvenient Truth on their way home, don't expect them to suddenly get a whole whiff of consciousness in the SUV and say, hold on a second. We just saw a movie that we are a part of. We're part of the problem. No, they won't see that. They'll think because they have gone to a party or given a check to some cause that somehow they have elevated their own personal status to that of a cause. They're still living through the myth of their story. So their corporate entities are filled with people that if you talk to them one-on-one, very few will act like greed is good. But at the end of the day, it's all about greed. The author saw a much fuller social context for the yearning and euphoria that had animated the greening of America. And so then we bring it full spectrum. We bring it up till today. Today, even more, we live in a time of economic tyranny. The mantra of hope has proven hollow when directed towards a political leader. Some react to disappointment by pinning their hopes on individual consciousness or cultural transformations. But be honest for a moment. Take a look around yourself. And this really galvanized when I just came back on a trip and I stopped off in Sedona, the supposed spiritual, artistic mecca of America. And all I found were a very disillusioned group of individuals living in the myth that because they were living in a beautiful and spiritual place, that they must have been beautiful and spiritual. And yet when asked, what are you doing to make it a better world? Have you gone to the shelter for battered women? Have you adopted a big brother, big sister policy? Are you helping the homeless vets or homeless people? Are you going to a hospice to help those passing? The answer was no across the board. But because they were able to, you know, sit for 3 hours over green tea at a local raw food restaurant and talk about consciousness, that somehow they were affecting change. No, that's what I've seen my entire life. I saw it in the New Age movement, self-appointed megalomaniacs. I've seen it with the Deepak Chopras and all the rest. Commercial spiritualism. There is no conscious movement in the United States today. There is no cultural transformation, and there's not going to be. You will have individuals who will decide that it's in their own best interest, their own survival, their own mental well-being to make changes they otherwise would not have made. And frequently to make them at a more radical level, to make the changes more complete than otherwise they would have done. But by and large, we have a young generation of crybabies, whiners, moaners, blamers, people who in any really serious situation throughout history would have been the first to die because they have zero capacity for survival unless they can use someone's credit card, sleep on someone's couch, hang out with someone, do drugs with them, and live the kind of vacuous life that so many live. They are pathetic. And someone should have the courage to stand up and tell them, grow up and don't just get a life. Get a real life. But instead, with few exceptions, what we do is we coddle them and exploit them. After all, there are about 80 million of them, and so therefore they're a good market. So we feed them endless distraction. So do you see any consciousness in that? No. Any social transformation? No. Except in a small group who decided that maybe they should put down their biases and look at libertarianism, at least through the type of libertarian views that is practiced by Ron Paul. I would agree with about 70% of his positions. And then see if you still could do something with the idealism that you do have, because there are a number, I would say about 7-8% of younger people who are more idealistic, who are trying to make a difference and are going to support a person. But then again, there's a difference between supporting the person and then making the actual lifestyle changes. What good does it do to support a person that doesn't want to see us in a global economy the way we have been because it's exploitive to the people who are the victims of it, and then turn around and go out in their Tommy Hilfiger jeans, in their Calvin Klein t-shirt, and eat McDonald's and drink a Coca-Cola and Twitter all day and say, but they're against the system. What exactly are you against? Because everything you're doing supports the system. It's like Madonna. I've never seen more pathetic excuses of a human being. And what we now accept is iconish art. Yeah, take away. You want to see people who could sing without any whistles or bells? Put any of the singers today on a stage by themselves and see out of 100 of your top singers how many could captivate you just in a cappella. And then you start to realize then we manufacture celebrity. And then from that we manufacture successes. What's this one with the big ass, Karzian? She's known for just having an ass. Well, the last time I remembered, an ass was a very functional part of the body that allowed human waste to be excreted. So she's famous for having a larger septic disposal system. Now, why don't we get glamour shots of that from inside the toilet up and say, this is who she really is. But if that's not part of who she is, then what exactly has she done? Well, she doesn't have to do anything. In today's world, you become a Paris Hilton, you become a woman like this. All you have to do is get enough publicity and suddenly everybody wants you. And yet the people who are really making a difference in the world, the people I know like Chris Hedges, you wouldn't know him if you saw him, and you wouldn't have the patience to listen to him. And if you did, you probably couldn't keep up. So we're intentionally dumbing down. Our school systems are a complete and utter failure at every level. It is remarkable that any children actually get out of the system capable of then functioning in a world by using the tools they learned in a constructive way. Our government is utterly corrupt. Fascism is a dominant theme underlying everything today. And yet the liberal left is supporting it. It's just amazing. So there we are. So I'm at a point where I would agree that this whole movement of raising your consciousness and creating a cultural transformation doesn't work and never has. Gandhi got a lot of his followers to raise their consciousness while he was with them. The moment he died, well, out the window went that consciousness, and they then went about, a lot of Hindus slaughtered a lot of Muslims at that time. But that's just a historical footnote. What do we do to make it a better world? First, we have to start with the idea that we are not the center of the world. The world didn't all wake up today to serve our needs and interests. And why don't we stop complaining and blaming and whining and actually see what we're capable of doing with some discipline, with some spiritual values, with some basic morality and ethic, and force ourselves against everything else in our society to actually understand our society, understand the danger of personalities like Glenn Beck's and others that run wild and then become messianic. And institutions that we trust, that when you look, you go for these stupid marches for the cure, and they're stupid. Why? Because they've never come up with a cure. And yet now it's just a ritual. Oh, we automatically go like, walk for the cure for AIDS. Well, show me one person you've cured with AIDS. They can't. Well, show me one person. They can't. And yet it becomes an institutional way of filling their pockets. All the institutions in America are corrupt today. The environmental movement, utterly sold out. All the politicians, the worst skanks alive. Total degenerates. The heads of the churches, thank God one of these religious right hypocritical bastards down in Atlanta got drawn out of the closet. Of course, he hated homosexuals. And almost always the people who hate or condemn homosexuality are homosexual closet queens. And what you hate the most, you generally are merely reflecting your own inner demons. So occasionally one of them gets caught, but only occasionally. The whole system is corrupt. And it's not going to get better, it's going to get worse. So if it takes a lot of pain for you to wake up, then, okay, you're going to get the pain without the Novocaine. It's coming. And it's coming to a neighborhood near you in the very near future. So what can you do? What can you do if you want to be one of the people who decides, okay, I'm going to get up today. I'm going to wake up finally. I'm going to do something. Right, what can you do? You can do a lot of good things. First and foremost, become a vegan with consciousness. Secondly, downsize your life. Scale back on everything. Sell what you have because you're going to lose it otherwise, unless you're very rich. Or have an absolute guaranteed income that can allow you to live in your lifestyle without making any changes. Look around the world, and don't look at all these foppish ideas of shared living. Let me tell you something. I met with a group of shared living people who wanted to see about buying some land for me and would I design them a place, a green environment. And I said, I have no problem helping you, but I need to meet with you first. So I met with the people. I've never met so many dysfunctional people. I said, so let me get this right. You've got a family and you're 19 and unemployed, and you are 78 and 73, and you got all these other people from all these walks of life, and you're all expected to live someplace together? Not going to happen. And yet everywhere, from Reesville, North Carolina, to Charlotte, to Sedona, and Taos, and Northern California, you have people who are joining together for shared living. Big mistake. Big mistake. Because the worst of human nature will be experienced, because when you're exchanging a total energy with another human being, that means they're going to put in you everything about themselves, the good and all the bad. Now, there's another way of doing it, which allows you to have the freedom to be in a beautiful, harmonious, and productive environment, but live your own life. The moment you take autonomy away from a person, you've automatically turned on the switch for intolerance and negativity. Instead, look for environments that allow you to continue to have your own privacy, your own ideals, where you don't have to subscribe to some common theme. And then make sure that you are able to support yourself so that it doesn't become a situation where, and I just saw this, by the way, where there were nine people hanging out and, you know, doing their yoga and having their wheatgrass juice, but none of them were working. As a result, they were deep in debt. And I believe by now they're probably closed their door. I won't mention where it's at. But I said to the owner, I said, why did you get all these people? Oh, they're so spiritual. I said, no, they're not. They're a bunch of lazy-ass bastards, you know, pretending that they're somehow connected with the spiritual, you know, Shiva goddess of India. I said, go to India. You got 750 people crapping every day all over the streets and lawns and everywhere. You can't walk 20 feet in India without seeing this, but no one ever shows it because no one wants to acknowledge that they put all their money and all their industry and all their best brains behind building a hyper industrial civilization to market to other people around the world, but did nothing for their mass amount of poor, which is about 1 billion poor. So now they'll show you their universities and their technology campuses and their multi-billionaires and the two brothers that are two richest in the country and their yachts and their airplanes. Well, why don't you turn your camera around and look at the field across the street? Now, you count how many people over there squatting and defecating. 750 million in the country each day. They have no indoor toilets. It's very inexpensive and easy to provide sanitation. But it means you'd have to make someone at least count in a value system. So the people who are talking about being together and yet won't go out and pick weeds and won't go out and grow food and won't do anything because, hey, dude, I'm here to meditate. I'm not here to work. And I said to this guy, good luck with this. This isn't going to work. And they were going broke because everybody wanted to kind of do their own thing. Yeah, no, that's just a recipe for disaster. No, get people who already in their lives have shown that they can function. Otherwise, you end up a Bellevue with good intentions. Because the negative, toxic, dysfunctional person is going to pollute the water. If 100 healthy people were drinking from a well and one person goes over and defecates in it, the well is polluted for everyone. And that's why you have to have a very, very critical selection process for anyone who is going to be a part of this. And that's why we don't have any culture movement. I just got an email today. I really should read it if I can find it. From a person who attended a KPFK Pacifica Foundation meeting yesterday. And he was saddened because he said this is how dysfunctional they have become. Now, these are people who, we are told, have got their act together. And I'm telling him that they're completely gone. I mean, they're utterly dysfunctional, all of Pacifica. They can't do anything. Here's what he wrote me. Quote, this is from today. Quote, most of the KPFK board is brain dead, and the station management doesn't realize the urgency of their situation. I was amazed to see management prefer to argue over how to raise money to put a solar panel on their roof as a statement and to repay the parking lot in their building, but not about how to meet payroll. The foundation is kiting money from one station to the next. For example, last week, KPFK had to send its bank account money to BAI to meet payroll. Now it will need to find money to meet its own. Pacifica hasn't paid Democracy Now! Anything in 2010, and it hasn't paid Free Speech Radio News or printers or any number of vendors. It's floating its budget on the backs of small vendors. And then it goes on to talk about, and I won't mention names, one person gets the Arbitrons but refuses to share them with the board. When I ask them why didn't they order the general manager to give them the reports, which they need to evaluate the performance of program director and the effectiveness of his program schedule, they seem to be afraid to do such as a radical thing. Well, this guy has moved or eliminated some programs, and the response of the removed programs and their allies on the board was that you can't treat people in such an inconsiderate way, meaning fire them because no one listens to them. Of course, it was also noted that he did not remove any failing programs produced by his friends. Then it goes on to talk about the board had virtually no information from the station about the breakdown of their drives. And then it talks about how they're constantly raising money, not making enough money, and what they could do in a constructive way, none of which did they want to hear about. And that's what happens when you get a group of people who are all from the community going to get together and cause good things to happen. No, you have gridlock, you have temperance, you have vested interests, you have power plays, and then you have chaos. And then you have meltdown, and whatever ideal you had that originated, it's gone. So just be aware that that is what you're going to have to deal with when you go to make your moves. So you do your homework. And if you're going to be told how to live, where to live, what to do by a group, a panel, a committee, forget about it. And there will be better ways, I can promise you. I'm Gary Knoll, back in a moment to hear your calls. I've given you a long introduction on a very important topic and give you something to think about. Now let's hear what you have to say. 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Come and meet those dancing feet on the avenue I'm taking you to, 42nd Street. Hear the beat of dancing feet. It's the song I love, the melody of 42nd Street. Little nifties from the 50s, innocent and sweet. Sexy ladies from the 80s who are indiscreet. They're side by side, they're glorified. Where the underworld can meet the elite. Naughty, 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 naughty. 42nd Street.
Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Let's go to Kevin, Orange County, California. Hi, Kevin.
Hello, Gary. How are you?
Doing great. I wrote 53 pages of my new book today. That's a lot of pages to write. But I got on a whole riff on the title of the book is called Generation Sub-Zero. And I'm going through each and every aspect of how did we get to be such a dysfunctional, selfish, self-absorbed, and completely nihilistic society. So I got that chapter written today. So every day it's another chapter.
Nice. Also, I'm looking forward to seeing your new movies, you know, whenever they come out.
3 weeks.
Nice. So, Gary, my question is about motivation. I have made some major improvements in my life in terms of nutrition and health, you know, and that in turn has improved the quality of my life. But I still find myself sublimating in different negative ways. But I would like to, you know, go that extra mile to enrich my life and consciousness and to, you know, learn new things, do more than, you know, getting good grades in school and, like, just to live the life to the fullest. You know, some days I find myself not motivated to do anything. I feel lazy, and there's a lack of excitement and zest. So I was wondering what you would suggest I do to make that temporary motivation and energy permanent in my life, and also to develop discipline.
All right, those are all legitimate concerns. First, start with asking yourself, how prepared are you to be the person that you would ideally like to be? That's going to determine whether or not you're going to then take a step and use the discipline to be a more open person and take advantage of the opportunities that exist in our society. if you need someone, me or anyone else, to motivate you, to appreciate you, or if you're in a relationship, someone to love you, it could mean that you need someone else to validate your self-esteem. In effect, you don't, the real you doesn't exist. There is not a Kevin as a real person. There's a Kevin who is confused. Confused by what you do as if that's who you are. You're far more relevant, Kevin, than your work, your possessions, or your toxic sublimations. And part of it is that we forget that knowledge is never the master of wisdom. Wisdom transcends knowledge. And so people are always out there trying to read the next book, go to the next lecture, become a part of the next secret, whatever it may be, watch Wayne Dyer, and suddenly we're going to transform our lives, but it never happens for the vast majority of people. And that's because everything is a choice not to do its opposite. So if you choose to eat healthy, it's also you're choosing not to eat unhealthy. If you're choosing to live a conscious, moral, and ethical life, it's because you're choosing not to live an immoral and selfish life. So you're always reflecting your opposite with every choice you make. So the wise person, the person coming from wisdom, makes the simplest choice there is, the honest choice, instead of the more convoluted choice, the conditioned choice. The conditioning is what allows you to want to do something better but not be motivated to do it, and then to want to be part of something but only to the degree that it doesn't cause you discomfort. And that's what I was saying earlier when I met all these people out in Sedona. I didn't say they were bad people, but I sure as hell would not have any of them come in any environment I'm at, because I want someone who is actually functional, who is connected to the real world, sees the problem, and is able to help it. You know, you don't, otherwise you're like a doctor saying, I'm willing to help anybody, and then you go up to the emergency room, you look inside, see all the blood and gore and trauma, and you say, oh my God, I can't go in there. There's a lot of blood and sick people in there. You know, you go in, nurse, orderly, go in, and I'll be over here thinking about what it means to be a holistic doctor, but don't put me in there. No, in the real world, you're going to be in there helping the people who need it, but not becoming infected in the process. So you continue to be motivated to help people, but the choice of what they're going to do once you have helped them is theirs, not yours. So you have to disconnect from the outcome. That's why most relationships fail, because someone works awful hard to get the other person in a relationship to agree to something, to change, to be a certain way. And the whole idea is, I'm going to make this person the clone of my perfect other self, male or female. And then one day, the other person, you know, wakes up and starts to argue, and you start to realize you don't have any right to make someone over in your manner. They're either going to be like you, or they're not going to be like you. And so what we do, we continue to associate with half measure. Everything is half measure. I'm a vegan. Oh, you mean that pizza you're eating, and you're fat, you smell, and you got hair all over your body where it shouldn't be. But you're a healthy vegan? No, you're an unhealthy person who has substituted one token effort to try to make yourself seem as if you're more together than you are. And that's what we do all the time in every aspect of life. It's like we try to remind ourselves by some gesture that, well, we're really better than how we normally act and think and what we do. As I told my friend who works at Goldman Sachs, I said, stop this bullshit of going all over the world with your wife and going to all these spiritual retreats. There's nothing spiritual in you. All you do every day is go in there and see how you can screw the average person or your own clients to get more money so you get a bigger bonus, so you and your wife can have the money to go all these wonderful places and pretend that you actually have a spiritual being that you're working through, when all you're working through is your material self. If you really were a spiritual person a long time ago, you'd have given up this and made your money elsewhere, where actually people are hired and helped, and so everybody participates. This is an exclusionary shop on Wall Street. Just those who are inside of it make the money without ever having to hire anybody or make a job or make a product. It's all based upon financial services. But in their mind, they're together people because What, they meditated with Deepak. Well, how much that cost you? So it's just all game. So stop the game. And then you won't confuse your external realities with our inner truths. Because everything in our external world is a lie. Everything. Everything. Everywhere. It's just you never get close enough to see the contradictions. I took a picture of a mountain from about 20 miles away. It was very beautiful. And then I got closer and closer until now I was 2 miles away. And I saw that the whole community had built right up to the mountain. I mean smack up against it, with the biggest mansions right up against it. Suddenly you're no longer seeing the mountain. You're seeing a mountain compromised in its integrity by people who are so insecure that they had to show that they could afford this monument to themselves. They had bragging rights. That's what we've become, a society who has bragging rights, unless you don't succeed, in which case then you associate with someone who does. And finally, the only thing that you own is your time. So that which is impermanent scares us. And when we're in our 20s and 30s, we never think of anything being impermanent. Today, everything has an expiration date. So be aware of the impermanence of everything and make your choices accordingly. That means get off your butt, stop looking for someone to come and rescue you, and rescue yourself. Okay, Kevin?
All right, thank you very much, Gary. Appreciate it.
All the best to you. Judith from Riverdale, New York. Hi, Judith.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you. I've been diagnosed, I've been misdiagnosed as having mental illness when I really have hypothyroidism. And I'm opposing the system, trying to oppose the system, because they have me court-ordered to take Haldol injections. And I have hypothyroidism, and I'm getting very terrible side effects. And
here's what you do. Just listen up, Judith. I'll be happy to help you. You are not alone. Millions of individuals have been wrongly diagnosed, and now they're going after children, teenagers, to diagnose them with social anxiety disorder. Or now they're just coming up in the next couple of weeks with somebody I haven't heard about, a youth sexual disorder. A hyposexuality, meaning not enough of a sex drive for someone that might not be able to achieve orgasm, in which case then they'll try to sell them a off-brand form of Viagra. Our whole mental illness industry is corrupt and is a fraud. The only way you can fight it is by getting in the hands of a good holistic doctor who specializes in thyroid. The best I know in the United States is Dr. Martin Feldman. In fact, you could read an article on the thyroid gland that we did, which is considered a definitive article, and it's published on my website. It was published in the Townsend Letter for Doctors and Patients. And then have him or someone who is equally skilled help you rebalance your system, and then have independent physicians. By the way, he's a board certified neurologist, qualified in psychiatry. But he, I'm sure, or someone else like him, could then have you do a few interviews to show that you are normal. Then you can get an activist attorney, someone like Marvin Small or David Slater. There's several that donate their time frequently and do pro bono work. They're very bright people. They're very good people. And they help people who have this cause. They're not your typical selfish, self-absorbed, overbilling lawyer. And that way you can go back and show the system you're normal, it's wrong, you have your own experts, medical doctors, psychiatrists, psychologists, and then you sue them. And then that gets in the media, how a normal person was forced to take a major antipsychotic medication. So that's how I would go about it, and I wish you all the best on that. Keep me posted, and I'll certainly... you can reach Dr. Martin Feldman at 212-744-4413. He's on 76th Street and Lexington Avenue, on the ground floor, on the southwest corner. F-E-L-D-M-A-N. Let's say hello to Carol from New York. Hi, Carol.
Hey, Gary, it's Stephen, and I'm going to give the phone to Carol right now. I just want to let you know your opening statements and your answer to the first question was so insightful, and I appreciate it so much. And I know so many people in the audience appreciate your connections to your mind and speaking your thoughts. It's just unbelievable. So I'm going to give you Carol. She's right here.
All right.
Gary.
Hi.
Gary, hi. I appreciate you talking to me. I'm shocked to be speaking to you right now. I was on the phone with my brother-in-law, who's a doctor. I was diagnosed 5 days ago, and I'm completely shocked with cervical or uterine cancer. And I have been a... I'm a Buddhist psychologist. I have been organic for 35 years. I preach all the same things that you believe. I try and have my green stuff, my red stuff, and I am shocked that I have this disease, and I am wondering if there's anything that I can do besides the traditional oncologic burning and cutting.
Oh, there's a ton of stuff you can do. What stage has it been diagnosed at?
It's a FIGO stage 1 tumor.
Oh, okay.
With high nuclear grade focal areas.
All right. So the good news is that you do have some time, and that's what you need. First, understand that you could have been doing all the right things in the recent past, but this could have been something as simple as a virus that you might have gotten from a vaccine earlier in your life. I recently counseled a nun who is a virgin at 63 and just found out that she has a whole series of herpes, herpes 1, 2, 6, and she said, how's that possible? I've never had sex, I've never had... And I said, do you realize you could get herpes from eating in a restaurant where they didn't sterilize the glass you drank from, the spoon or fork you ate with, the plate that you ate on, and also from the vaccines? In fact, just last week, a new vaccine, not a new vaccine, but a vaccine was shown in a new study to be creating massive herpes, and all these people didn't have it, including one of the worst kind, which is shingles. So do not be puzzled by something you may have done. Also, think of how many times you may have used a cell phone or been in front of a computer, also throwing out electromagnetic pulses. Then, so even in our environment, even when we think we're doing the right thing, sometimes we don't realize we could be impacted. Living in an area, you have to check to see whether or not you have any radon coming up through your the rocks around your house. Most people never get a radon check to determine that. It's something simple, and yet if you have radon gases, that can cause it. And it's silent. You can't smell it, see it. It's like radiation.
Right.
And one single X-ray at any time in your life is enough to cause cancer at a later point in your life. Just one. Now, I'm giving you this as background because the causes are so multifactorial.
Right.
Viruses, bacteria, fungi, parasites, heavy metals, all that. And it could come from polluted air, water. It could come from toxic outgassing of different furnishings at different times in life. So whatever it is that's caused it, what we have to understand is we have to compensate. And the way I approach cancer is I approach with compensation, meaning The cancer is showing there is an imbalance. So we now have to exceed the imbalance with balance, which means that we have to go beyond what we would normally go, because what we would normally go isn't enough. So the diet has to be purely alkaline to balance the pH of the blood, which in turn inhibits the proliferation of cancer cells.
Right, I understand that.
And alkaline foods range between 7.2 and 7.6, and you don't want to be too high, and that's it. And ideally, the diet should be 80% alkaline-forming foods, raw fruits and vegetables, nuts and seeds and grains and legumes. They're all alkaline. Then concentrations of juices 13 times a day with cruciferous vegetables, meaning kale, mustard greens, collards, broccoli, cabbage, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, and broccoli sprouts. And those have two things. They have the indoles, which help remove cancer and causing substance from the body, and they also are detoxifying, and they interfere in the carcinogenic activity. Then we want to make sure that we're getting extra virgin olive oil three times a day, flaxseed oil three times a day, primrose and borage oil, and black currants oil twice a day. Increase the amount of wheatgrass. Buy yourself a wheatgrass machine. They're about a cut, $200. You can grow your own wheatgrass. It's very easy to do. And if you go to Johnny's Seed Catalog, the commercial, you can buy big 50-pound bags, dirt cheap, and that helps you. But you'll want seven drinks of green wheatgrass per day. You want the isoflavones, genistein, green tea, 2,000 milligrams a day in divided doses. Then you'll want concentrations of your healing mushrooms. Maitake kills cancer cells by enhancing the activity of the T helper cells. And that's very important, and that'll make a difference.
Gary, have you ever heard of the Gerson therapy and Robert O. Young?
In my opinion, you can do a lot better. In fact, what I'm telling you exceeds theirs.
Okay.
You're not going to have the sodium. You're going to go high on the potassium, and that potassium has to be in there. And that's really the Gerson program.
Right.
It's 13 glasses of juice that Dr. Max Gerson. But when Gerson died, it's my opinion his therapy stopped with him. And his sister's continued, but I am not a fan of hers. I believe she's very dedicated to helping people, but I also remember the time when someone called me in a panic. I was in New York, and I was in my office, and it was a Saturday, and someone was being thrown out of the Gerson Clinic, literally on the street after they'd been there and spent over $30,000. So I had to get on the phone and talk with this Gar Hildebrand and another person to get them to stay in there. And I had just released a film on alternative therapies in which they were in it. And I thought that was very cold. And then everybody passed back. Well, you know, it's not our call. It's the medical doctors. No, you're still dealing with a human being, but they didn't seem to care. The person was finally allowed to return and get therapy. But I shouldn't have to intercede.
No.
They should have done the right thing. Also, seaweeds are very important. And they're known to soften the cancers. And then intravenous vitamin drips. That is going to be the core of the protocol. You start with like 40,000, and then every week you're going to go up about 25,000 until you hit way up around 200,000 milligrams.
So I know Raphael Kalman, and I'm sure he could help me.
He's good. He would.
Yeah.
Also, with Kalman, you get the bonus of having Elena, who is carrying on Dr. Rivisi's work. So you get
I met her. Yeah.
She's very nice. I've known her since I was a junior scientist at the Institute, where she was also there. And then alpha-lipoic acid, generally 1,000 milligrams a day.
So, Gary, I want to ask you this. And it's also, I'm sure your audience is interested, because now I've done so much research on cancer that my cells are exploding because I'm in shock, and I'm also a scientist, so I
would also suggest ozone.
Ozone.
I would suggest getting a hold of Howard Robbins. And I'm out of New York for 3 weeks when I come back. Have you watched the 4.5-hour documentary I did this year called Preventing and Reversing Cancer Naturally?
No, I didn't know that you did that this year.
Yeah, that was just brand new. It's 4.5 hours long, and it really details the therapy that works best.
And where can I get that?
Just call my office or go by my office.
And I can, okay.
The number at the office is 646-926-5422. And then just ask for a Diane or a Jessica.
And I guess
I would also suggest until I can come get back and then I can see you in person, give Luann Panessi a call because she follows the protocols and she's qualified in the area and she can help guide you.
I mean, it's very scary because, you see...
We're running out of time, so you better write down what I'm telling you.
Okay.
You've already told everyone that you're scared. We got it.
Okay, right?
And I'm telling you, you got to get a lot of information.
I guess what I want to ask you is, why is it Cleveland Clinic and, Memorial here, Sloan Kettering in Manhattan, and all the other people that I know are saying cut and burn. That is
okay.
Fair
enough. No. They have a right to say that, and you have a right to listen to it.
That's what I want to know.
And how about doing this? How about toe tag and bury? 425,000 people who were cut and burned last year were toe tagged and buried without a refund.
Yeah.
Right. Keep it real. Okay.
Right.
63. Write down the phone number. 631-504-6198. 631-504-6198. And for Howard Robbins, what the heck's his number? 212-581-0101, I think it is.
Okay. I'm sure I can call the office.
So that'll get you started. So watch the 4.5 hours. That'll get you resource material. And
Sorry.
That'll show you what works. Because everyone I have in the film, it works. And then out on Long Island, Dr. Slazzo is quite simply, in my opinion, the best holistic oncologist in the United States. Right behind him would be Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez. Right behind him would be Dr. Michael Schachter in that
order. And who is the first person that you told me? Not Nicholas Gonzalez.
No, Slazzo. Yeah. And you can get his phone number from Luann Panessi.
Okay. Gary, my heart goes out to you and all the unbelievable work that you do to help all of us. And I am eternally grateful, and you've been instrumental. Certainly, I'm over 50, so people don't think I am, but now that I have cancer, God only knows. But you, you're an amazing being, and thank you so much.
Well, look at it this way. If you're over 50 and you don't look it, by cleaning up your diet, you're going to even look younger.
I mean, I don't know how much cleaner it can get. I was shopping off of the back of, with the hippies coming down with their sacks of brown rice from the Hudson Valley before there was anything here. I'm originally from California, and, where all the surfers had organic food and there was nothing here. You were the only person with a health food store. That and brownies.
Yep,
so that's how.
That goes back a ways. The Fertile Earth.
Sure
the old
does.
Fertile Earth. The first gourmet vegetarian restaurant in the country. All you could eat for $2.50.
Yeah.
You remind me of pleasant times back in. Thank you very much. Keep me in the loop. You can reach out to me, Luann.
Gary. Thank you so much.
She'll help you with my protocol, and we'll see that this is no longer something for you to fear, and therefore you can release all that positive energy in the healing process. We're out of time now. Thank you all for listening. Now, stay tuned for Michael Rupert in the Life Vote Hour.